Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 21st day of May, Anno Domini 2022, and you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And it's 6 minutes after the hour. We are going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes, don't get the blues. Here comes the news.
Hello.
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 Maybe.
Hello, hello.
Hello.
I had to play that for you.
I appreciate it. Nothing like the boys first thing in the morning. A first-of-its-kind security analysis of iOS's Find My function, Find My Computer, Find My Phone, Find My Watch, whatever it is, the Find My function has identified a novel attack surface that makes it possible to tamper with the firmware and load malware onto a Bluetooth chip that's executed while an iPhone is off. The mechanism takes advantage of the fact that the wireless chips related to Bluetooth, near-field communication, and ultra-wideband continue to operate while iOS is shut down when entering a power reserve low-power mode. While this is done so as to enable features like Find My and facilitate express card transactions, all three wireless chips have direct access to the security elements. The Bluetooth and ultra-wideband chips are hardwired to the secure element in the near-field communication chip, storing secrets that should be available in low-power mode. Since low-power mode support is implemented in hardware, it cannot be removed by changing software components. As a result, on modern iPhones, wireless chips can no longer be trusted to be turned off after shutdown. Isn't that special? This poses a new threat model. The low-power mode features, newly introduced last year with iOS 15, make it possible to track lost devices using the Find My network, even when run out of battery power or have been shut off. Current devices with ultra-wideband support include iPhone 11, iPhone 12, and iPhone 13, and probably iPhone 14 and 15 and 22. A message displayed when turning off iPhones reads, "iPhone remains findable after power off. Find My helps you locate this iPhone when it is lost or stolen, even when it is in power reserve mode or when powered off." So at least they tell you that, which is nice. Since low power mode support is based on the iPhone's hardware, it cannot be removed with system updates. Thus, it has a long-lasting effect on the overall iOS security model. It's not easy to implement this hack yet, but you can be sure that the bad guys are working tirelessly to implement it and make it easier to implement. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that is Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is the iPhone can be hacked even when off. Your choices are, son of a pup, well, that's disappointing, oh well, I what now, and other. So far, we currently have 18 votes. Son of a pup is first, followed by I what now, that's disappointing, and neither oh well or other have any votes yet. However,
how many people actually read that, you know, knowingly,
yeah,
that they could, you know, that this is something that's going to happen to them? I guarantee you they skip over that fine print.
Well, and because, well, let me finish this first.
Yeah, go.
And if you have more to say, or, you know, please vote in the poll. Please vote in the poll. But if you have more to say, you can head on over to our website at soundbites.org. That's Bites with a Y. Francis would like us to remind you. Scroll down on the right under Fascinating Stuff. You'll see the forum. The second forum down is the poll discussion. Currently, at least the number one item under poll discussion is 21 May 22. The iPhone can be hacked even when it's off. And, of course, you can give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. The other thing to remember, of course, is that you've got, this is all near-field communication stuff. So those things you see in the movies where somebody walks by and steals your credit card. That's what that is.
That's real, folks. It's not, you know, just in the movies and pretend.
Right.
They love going through a mall or shopping areas or wherever they can just, and it looks innocent, you know, because they just have this device in a fanny pack or whatever walking around and steal information left and right.
And I'll guarantee you there are people right now, right this minute, working on ways to use that to get into your iPhone. It's a real problem. And the serious part of that problem is that there is no fix. It is a hardware thing that's built into your iPhone. And consequently, a software update will not fix it. So people, I don't know what Apple's going to do.
Yeah.
What can they do?
Seems that Apple has a different definition of off than most people would think.
Exactly.
Off isn't off?
It also means...
Well, the phone is off, but the Wi-Fi is still on. Yeah.
They're protecting you.
It also means that movie trope where people turn off their phone so they can't be tracked. Now you do have to go the extra yard and throw it on the ground and stomp on it.
You just take the SIM card out.
Or take the SIM card out, I suppose.
I love when somebody does
that. That's not particularly dramatic, though, is it?
Right. When somebody does that in the movies, you know, throws it out the window or stomps at it. I love it when the guy's, I just bought that. I think I did hear once somebody said, you could have just taken the SIM card out.
Yep. Yeah, so... We do have this deep love affair with our Apple devices, and Apple has done a great job making it both easy and convenient to use those devices. Sometimes they don't think it through far enough, and this is one of those instances. So
it's one of those gotcha points that they never thought could or even thinkable,
right?
Of happening, you know. I mean, it's like, no. Right. Oh, it probably even never came up. Be honest with you.
Right.
It's just one of those things that, oh shoot, one of those moments, you know, where all of a sudden it does happen, and it's like, oh shoot, why didn't we think of that?
Yeah,
well, that's all. How so many different ideas come up? Is it's just all of a sudden a snap idea or a thought somebody had off the blue. Oh, well, why don't we try doing this or doing that? And turns into a multi-million thing or whatever.
Right, exactly right. So, yeah, there's a whole school of build it and then break it. Mm-hmm. Quality assurance. My father-in-law did that for a living for 100 years. And it's you build it and then you give it to somebody who has a bit of a malicious streak, if not actually a full mean streak,
just
to
like,
break it.
Like the old days when we used to beta test.
Yes.
I always had the knack of breaking anything someone made, and I didn't really do it intentionally.
Right.
Well, it says, please enter your name, so I type a bunch of gibberish numbers into it, and it broke.
Right.
The guy you were supposed to enter your name. Well, maybe a cat walked on the keyboard.
Yeah, right.
Maybe that's the cat's name.
Maybe that's the cat's name. And I would see that, you know, Dave, who worked for me and then when I retired, took that position. I say he took my job. Of course, I retired. But Dave could break anything. So I always had my programmers, when they were, I would say, you know, I'm going to give this to Dave. And the terror in their eyes. They'd go back to the drawing board and rework stuff.
Yeah, rethink it.
And the prize was if you only got Dave to find three or four things that were broken. Dave is very, very good at it.
Well, those are the days I miss, you know, when I had this other PC. It was an old desktop PC with the hard drives on it and the 5 1/4 floppy.
Yep.
And we used to get sent the next version of Symantecs or whatever. And it was that PC. All it did was beta test software. And I did it for Symantecs. I did it for Windows. And the faxing program.
Oh,
WinFax.
WinFax.
Yep, I did it for them. I also did it for a while for Quicken and CorelDRAW. And, you know, a number of them. But that used to be the fun over the years was getting the latest package and then, all right, you got to break it. And then once you had it, you download any updates or fixes and see if you could break that one then.
Right.
And
it was I did WordPerfect and I did a bunch of stuff over the years, and it was always pretty neat when you found a problem and then fix it the next day. You know, that was really kind of nice. But
it's like the flowchart of troubleshooting. Have you seen that meme going around? Why isn't this working? This is supposed to work. It worked yesterday. Oh, how can this work?
Yeah, right. But yeah, and nowadays, as we keep saying, we are particularly for Microsoft, but honestly for Microsoft and Apple, we are the beta testers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they send stuff out that has not been as fully tested as it could be. Take a look at this problem and any given Patch Tuesday on Microsoft's side. And you will find that there are things that you would think somebody would have found, and they did not. I don't get it. I don't get it. You know, I do get it. I mean, Microsoft is doing it, and clearly Apple is doing it too. They're paring down the number of people who do QA, if they have any. Microsoft doesn't, as far as I can tell, who do QA. And consequently, stuff slips through.
Yeah.
So the people who do the beta testing are us.
Because the variables are too enormous. And right. What I mean by that, folks, is the variety of machines and the combinations. It's not like the old days back in the late 80s and 90s where you had just a box, two hard drives, maybe a hard drive in there and two floppy drives, a monitor. And, oh, if you were lucky, you also had a new thing called a mouse.
Right.
That was about it. So it's very simple to write stuff and, you know, work out the tweaks.
And there was no internet. There was none of that stuff.
And the graphics card weren't as numerous nor the CD-ROM drives and all this other stuff. I mean, the combinations. Remember the old zip drives and that we used to run through?
Oh, the click of death.
Yeah. And I
was cleaning and I found a zip drive.
Oh, did you?
I don't know what the heck is on it, and I don't know where I'm going to see what's on it, but I have a zip disk now.
I think I still have a USB zip drive at the office. People bring in really old things.
Yeah.
We had a Bernoulli disk once that was a little trouble.
Oh, the old Bernoulli
drives. I have
an
old Bernoulli disk.
Yeah. Finding somewhere. The drives, yeah. I remember seeing a meme on comments in code, and someone had posted, you know, dear future programmer, I know this is crap. I intend to get around to fixing it, but if you're reading this, I didn't. Sorry.
Still on my to-do list.
Yeah.
I still have a couple of 8-inch floppies. That I even
they make a medicine for that now.
Yeah, right. Exactly. I even know what's on them, but I have no way to read them. They're in a format. They were on the old Exidy Sorcerer. Go ahead, find that format. Somewhere, anywhere.
Last time I saw 8-inch was when I worked on a trash 80.
Yeah. Some of the older ones had an 8-inch
drive.
Yeah, we
had a trash 80, and that was our first computer in our lab at the time.
You can still buy 3.5-inch floppy disks, new.
Great.
USB. I put 8-inch in my search query, and I haven't seen one yet.
They're not happening there.
Well,
no.
You could probably still get them for, you know, the USB, that the hook up to a USB port.
Some on sale for sale on eBay.
I'm sure. But again,
do they work or not?
It's in a CPM format that I believe was proprietary to the Exidy Sorcerer. Might not have been, but.
Oh, here's one for the Alpha 10.
There you go.
And a Trash 80.
There you go. I also have a bunch of cassettes for the Jupiter Ace. The Jupiter Ace was the Sinclair, what did they call it, Z80? The Sinclair
Z80?
It was that little thing that the Jupiter Ace was a Sinclair, but it ran fourth instead of basic. And I have a whole bunch of programs for that. And I've probably still got the Jupiter Ace in a drawer somewhere.
I had a cassette drive for my Atari 400.
Nice. I had an Atari 400 somewhere too. That may have been tossed out by now. But I've got a bunch of old things. I still have in the plastic an original version of 1.0 Microsoft Excel and 1.0 Microsoft Word.
Yep.
Still in the plastic boxed setup. 5 1/4 inch floppies.
I still miss my PC Junior.
Of course you do. That was a great machine.
That was so much fun, and the graphics on it were kick butt.
Yep.
Somebody is asking $7,500 for that on eBay.
For what?
A new in-box shrink-wrapped Excel. Oh, this is version 5 from 93.
5.
Yep. Oh, it's a movie prop. It's not an original box.
I've got the original box.
He wants $7,500 for a movie prop.
Yep.
What movie was it in?
Yeah, right. Because if it was in Herbie Fully Loaded, I don't want it.
Yeah.
You think?
I think. But yeah, the here, let me ask you a question, Steve. Why is it that on Twitch, everything is clear and in focus? And on, oh, now it is. Okay. All right. It was me. And I'm not surprised.
I wonder if we're really saturating the school's internet here.
I know. You're right.
Because I'm sending out 3 streams and then bringing back in a monitor. You're bringing in a monitor.
Yep. Yep.
And depending on what they've got going on, there's something going on at the school.
Yeah. Right.
Who knows what's going there.
Right. You would think Saturday you'd be safe at a school.
Yeah.
But they do a lot of Saturday events.
Yeah. No.
So who knows? But yeah, so there's that's one of the reasons you like the Raspberry Pi 400, because it reminds you of the PC Junior.
Yeah. Oh, as a matter of fact, I got my friend in Australia.
And the Coco, the color computer.
Yep.
Yeah.
My friend in Australia, been talking to him back and forth. He finally pulled the trigger and got a 400. Because he's like me, worked on a lot of different computers. He's a computer guy down there in Sydney. And he's saying, yeah, and I got him over to Ubuntu. He goes, this is cool. So, you know, I walked him through the whole thing. So now we've been going back and forth, just sharing stories and getting things set up and testing this and testing that. And he was having the same problem I was, because he's got 3 other computers throughout the house, and it wasn't finding them. So I was showing him how to just do the Windows R thing and type the parameters for that in, and boom, there's the shared drive, and you can map it, and okay, go back and forth. And yeah, I think he's going to slowly, but he's like me. There's a number of ham software programs that right now won't run in no matter what Ubuntu program, your version, Cinnamon or whatever, Xubuntu, Red Hat, none of them. They just haven't crossed over. Right now, they're primarily just Windows-based and Mac-based.
Have you tried Wine?
Yeah, Wine. Some of them just don't play.
Oh, they won't run on the Raspberry Pi because it's an ARM processor, not an Intel processor.
Yep.
Got it. Oh, if you were running them on an Intel machine,
yeah,
under Wine, they would run. Got it.
Although I have read the Wine people are working on an ARM right. version, because the Mac is now all ARM right. based.
Well, I posed that question to NPass,
right?
Because I wanted NPass on my 400.
Sure.
And they, you know, at first, I think I told you this a while ago, I wrote them and said, hey, wait a minute, I followed your instructions and this doesn't work. You claim it works on Ubuntu. It doesn't work on a Raspberry Pi 400 or 4.
So it looks like it already works on Debian, Fedora, MAMO, and OpenSUSE.
Right, but it won't work
Wine.
On any ARM
Wine.
Product.
Wine for ARM, yeah.
Yeah, it won't work on ARM, any product with ARM. And then you go, well, we don't support that right yet.
Yeah, those 4 products, it's bundled with it, Wine on ARM.
And I go, well, that's not very convenient.
Yep.
And I waited a couple days. All of a sudden, he got back to me and goes, yes, that isn't very convenient, is it? I'm sorry for the answer. He says, I'm throwing it over to our support person. So supposedly, it's going over to their support, and they're going to look at doing the ARM, too, because Raspberry Pis are becoming so popular.
Yep.
Right, Right.
And I think it's just a matter of time. As a matter of fact, this other logging program that a bunch of us use, the guy did a great job up until version 17 of Ubuntu. And it's like he never did kept up with the updates. And now it doesn't work for beans. So I feel bad for these folks that were using it. They had to stick a couple of hams wound up rolling back to an older version and having to suffer with that because they've got their all their logs and everything else
sure.
in there. They had to export them out and then move it over to another program, which in ham radio, that's no big deal because everybody in this community sticks to a standard format. And it doesn't matter whether you're running a Mac, a PC, or Unix, Linux, whatever.
Right, right, right.
It's all the same format, so you can...
I hope you're reminding everybody to back up regularly.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Matter of fact, that was one of my articles I did a few months ago for the Rag, was getting into folks backing up using, like, NPass.
Yep.
Because we're all, you know, not just ham radio, but everybody, day to day, like we talk here. They're not, you know, taking the time to set it up. And because once you get it done, you know, set up, it's easy, folks. It'll put your passwords in there for you. And they can be very complex and long. Keeps you safe, your information safe, everything else, especially nowadays, the way they're stealing information left and right, the scammers are... There's two new guys that just came out, and they are pranking the scammers, and they've got...
Oh, on YouTube?
Yeah.
I've seen them.
There's yeah. this one guy, though, he has wound up coming up with a routine that, you know, because these scammers are usually working on a laptop, he can turn on, he's written a program that can turn on the video camera on the laptop, and then all of a sudden the person that's running the scam is there on the screen.
It's like, the one I saw where he said something like, hey, that guy behind you looks like he's asleep. And he turns in and goes, yeah, he's pretty...
then they realize. I love it.
It looks like the wine on ARM
mm-hmm.
will run... ARM program. So if you have a program that's written for Windows CE or Windows RT or like that, that'll work. But not Windows.
Like I'm using Ubuntu.
Yeah, Parallels has got something working now because I've installed it on an M1 ARM-based Mac. Installing Windows for ARM, which is hard to find.
Oh, yeah.
And then they were able to install a couple of x86 programs, which is interesting.
Nice.
What we're talking about.
So it's an x86 program in a virtual ARM OS running on a ARM-based OS, but not an ARM OS.
What we're talking about, folks, basically is programs, when they're written, they support certain operating systems. You know, and it's like, all right, to get down like
to... More importantly, certain architectures in the chip.
Yeah, right. So you can't necessarily put a Mercedes part in a Chevy.
Right.
Right.
And, you know, when they come out with, like, Windows, say, 95 and then 97, and then Windows 7, 8, 9, 10, whatever, they change the architect to fit that. And, you know, usually programs have to adapt to that.
And more importantly, in when you're talking about doing something on a Raspberry Pi, the ARM processor is not the same as the Intel processor or the M1 processor.
Right.
So you can't necessarily run code designed for one of those chips on another chip. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and with you. It is 29 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites, on the great member supported Jazz 90.1. See you in a couple of minutes.
Computer talk you can understand. More Soundbites is next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 35 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. This is a great piece of news for many of us. Google has quietly dropped its demand that users of its free G Suite Legacy Edition cough up to continue enjoying custom email domains and cloud-based productivity tools.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Because they've been saying in June you'll be able to get on the waiting list for the next free service.
That's exactly right. This story starts in 2006 with the launch of Google Apps for Your Domain, a bundle of services that included email, a calendar, Google Talk, and a website building tool. Beta users were offered the service at no cost, complete with the ability to use a custom domain if users let Google handle their MX record. That's the mail record. We handle your mail, which is a good thing because they have all those great features and spam filters and everything else. Then in January of 2022, Google warned users who scored free access that their time was up. By mid-year, they'd need to either pay for a workspace at $6 per month per user.
That's only 50% off for the first 6 months.
For the first six months.
Then it goes to $12
right,
per user.
$12 per month. Yeah. Right. Or put themselves on a wait list for a free service that offered all the same features they'd enjoyed for years, other than using their own custom email domain. So if I were at Nick at AskNick.com, oh, wait, I am, I could no longer use that domain if I wanted the free Google services. The prospect of a murky migration was not something users found appetizing. To put it mildly, matters were made worse by Google dangling a vague promise of ongoing free service, but without explanation of its features or how long users could be on a wait list before the new service kicked in. Those worries are now history, for now, as Google quietly updated a support document with news that it added on an option to stay on the no-cost legacy G Suite, provided the suite is used for personal purposes only. It's a one-click process, after which, mercifully, nothing changes. All data and email accounts remain in place without interruption. Users aren't completely out of the woods if they don't choose the free personal option. I'm going to repeat this. Please pay attention. If they don't choose the free personal option by August 1st, 2022, they may lose access and data. August 1st, 2022. You have the rest of May, all of June, and all of July to make this decision. And since it's a two-click decision, go do it now. The service is still modest. Each of the allowed 10 users gets only 15 gig of cloud storage and basic document editing and collaboration service, but the price is hard to beat and infinitely lower than the $100 annual fee Microsoft charges for Office 365 Family, the product often suggested as an easy replacement for legacy G Suite. So are you relieved? Oh, I have a link which I'll give to Steve to type in.
Yeah, it sends me into my Google account, and I'm trying to figure out a way to post that without
my Google account. Yeah,
I'm pulling it out of your notes.
Oh, okay, good.
I click on it, and it makes me log into my Google account.
Right, but you're asked to log into your Google account. It doesn't say, oh, this is all Steve Ray.
Yeah.
So are you relieved? I know I am. Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299, toll-free, 1-800-790-0415. This is a thing that even Google is learning is a thing they have to deal with.
Yep.
People get angry when you give them something free and then take it away.
Yeah, that's just no different than Microsoft. They sit there and give you different features and then all of a sudden stop supporting them.
And you had it for 6 years. 6 years people had this.
It's been longer than that since it originally came out.
Well, right.
We've got 100 free email addresses on our Google Workspace because we started so long ago.
Right. Listen, if you've had one of these and were worried about how to change over, and it is a pain in the patoot to change over, quite honestly, now you don't have to. So congratulations. It's all good now. All right. To the phones. Our first caller is Bill from Greece, New York. Hiya, Bill. What's up?
Good morning, gentlemen.
Who walked in?
I knew I'd get that back. I'm having a problem with Firefox and eBay. It happens on Microsoft, Linux, and Android. It happens on my desktop, my tablet, and my laptop. When I try to search for something on eBay, I get nothing back but a list of websites. Now, I've tried uninstalling the cache. I've tried deleting the history. I even went so far as to uninstall one of my Linux distros, install a new Linux distro, install Firefox. I did not sign in. I tried to do a search, and again, all I got back is a list of websites that I can go to do whatever. I can't get individual search items back. Searching the internet, somebody said it might have something to do with new security on Firefox, but I'm stumped.
Okay, that's just weird. And you're just going to eBay.com and doing a search there.
Right. And it doesn't happen on an old. I got an old Android which can update to the new Firefox, and that works fine.
Does it do it in Chrome?
In Chrome, I'm fine. In Falcon, I'm fine. In Chromium, I'm fine. But in Firefox, on all systems, it will not give me a search.
Okay,
and
that's really weird.
I even put a new Linux distribution in, downloaded Firefox, did not sign in, so it had no idea who I was.
Right.
Yeah, couldn't even do up a list for you.
Okay,
that's weird.
Yeah, but you didn't sign into you didn't sign into eBay either.
I didn't sign into Firefox or eBay.
Okay, that's just nuts because I just.
Tell me about it.
I'm on eBay right now in Firefox. I typed in air fryer because there was one going by when I logged in. And I now have a list of brands with pictures and descriptions and prices.
Yeah, and this is multi-distribution. It's Linux, Microsoft, Android.
What you might need to try is this. Before you delete Firefox from one of your devices, kill all of the
extensions
and then delete your cache and all of that stuff, everything.
I've done that.
Oh, you have?
You got rid of the extensions too?
All my extensions.
Right. If he didn't log in, he doesn't get the extensions back.
When I put Firefox in on my new Linux, I did not log in, so there wouldn't be any extensions.
No. Not necessarily. Windows and a lot of systems have the bad habit of still retaining stuff.
Well, how about Android and Linux? Do they do that too?
Yep.
So what browser was it in?
But this was a brand new distribution of Linux.
Firefox without
extensions. So it had nothing to retain.
Oh, okay. So you literally wiped the machine out and installed a new version.
And I installed a version of Linux I've never used before.
That's not the answer we wanted to hear.
Well, I don't.
That's
weird.
Nuts. That's nuts. I got to be honest with you. I am stumped.
I was worried you were going to say that.
There is a way to launch Firefox and disable all add-ons and extensions.
Right. Didn't I do that when I put a new distro of Linux in?
Yeah, if you wiped
wiped out the operating system,
lost all memory of anything.
All of the built-in extensions and add-ons would still be loaded.
He wiped out everything.
But I'm running Firefox, and I'm not seeing. So it can't be a built-in extension.
And he said he started fresh. He wiped the machine, started a new Linux install, and then rebuilt everything.
See, that's what's stumping me because. Yeah. Had it been, I could say, oh, it's some sort of virus. It's a remnant left over. Yep. But if you actually wiped the drive and installed a brand new version of Linux and then a brand new Firefox.
A totally different hard drive.
That is nuts.
In fact, I'm on it right now, and I just did a search for SD card. And what comes up to me is a thing that says all listings except overs. It says format. It says related searches. And then as I go down, it gives me ads to web pages. But I get no individual listings. Now, when I first open Firefox, I see, little blocks that show me, you can buy this, you can buy an air fryer, et cetera.
Yeah, yeah.
But as soon as I do a search, and like I say, I wiped everything out.
Yeah.
And I did not sign into Firefox. I did not sign in.
Could it be tied around the
eBay?
extensions around the search engine? It's got to be.
Well, but he's not in a search engine.
He said when he types in a search.
You're definitely in eBay, not in Google.
Or fake eBay.
It's a good eBay. It says that it's secure.
It says eBay.com at the top, not
a little lock at the top.
Yeah, but it's at https://www.ebay.com/nothing else.
I've got https://www.ebay.com, and then a whole bunch of stuff after that.
Yeah.
Because I did a search.
Right. But you're definitely on eBay.
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay, that's just nuts.
That's not right.
That's not right.
Could it be something in my router?
No, because if it was, yes, then why wouldn't maybe. It do it for Chrome and the rest of them? I mean, a search engine is a search engine.
I'm seeing reports that Firefox is trying to block trackers, and maybe that's what's happening. eBay has too many trackers on it. Let's see, Firefox stop blocking trackers.
Interesting.
And that would be on a new install of Firefox?
Yeah.
Well, that would be on anything. Yeah.
So how do you turn? I went into privacy and turned everything off I could find.
Let's see.
Yeah, I'm.
Go to the little shield icon, and you can see what's turned on and what's turned off.
Right. I'm on eBay in my.
Okay, if I go to the shield icon, I see enhanced tracking protection is on for this site.
Turn it off.
So I turn that off.
Reload the site.
And I'll close the browser, and I'll reopen the browser.
Yeah, but I've got enhanced tracking protection on, too.
Yeah.
Oh, yours is on.
It's just you. Firefox knows it's you.
Yeah, it doesn't like you, clearly.
I get the same thing. I get a list of websites.
Well, and check the shield again. Make sure you...
All right. No, the shield has got a cross through it.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Yeah, there are a lot of tracking cookies and a lot of stuff.
And why would this happen on a new hard drive and a new installation of Linux?
Yeah. Let me ask you a question. And in that shield at the bottom, there are protection settings. And on mine, it's set to standard. What it's set to?
Standard.
Yeah, I hate you.
Well, you can try it. Well, set it to custom and turn off all of the tracking and script. Crypto miner blocking, fingerprint blocking, tracking blocking.
Yeah, but what it actually sounds like is it's blocked CSS.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's not seeing, and so I'm not...
It's not supposed to be possible.
It's not supposed to be automatic, no.
Why is that working? Why isn't that working? Oh, my God. Oh, that's what... How could that ever work?
Yeah, exactly. It is blocking 64 different things.
I could see it could be something in the DNS lookups, but then it should happen in any browser.
Yeah. No. Yeah. I don't know. I wish I had an answer for you, but I do not.
Yeah.
How about a private window? Does that change anything?
What's a private window?
Yeah, that's a good idea. You can private windows, A, do zero tracking, and B, tend to turn off most of the...
history, it doesn't look at your cache or your cookies.
How do I open a private window?
On the Mac, it's file, new private window.
Yeah, under the...
No, I'm in Linux.
Yeah. Control-Shift-P.
Control-Shift-P, huh?
We jokingly refer that to as porn mode, because it technically is private from anyone else using your computer. It's not private from the internet, which is what a lot of people think it's private
for. Okay, Control Shift P did nothing on my Linux. Oh, wait a second. Right now I'm in Microsoft.
Yeah, no. You want to be in Firefox? Control Shift P.
I'm in Firefox on Microsoft.
You should get a little purple mask icon showing you that you're in private browsing.
In the upper right corner.
I have to do that to get on Facebook now. Maybe because you were having trouble getting to Facebook.
Yeah.
I do it in a private window. It works fine.
Interesting.
I can't get a... That Control-Shift-T did nothing.
Okay,
Is there a file menu where you can make a new window?
Yes. The file menu is on the right. It's those three parallel bars.
I see the three parallel bars. What do I do there?
Click on that. And then the fourth choice down is new private window.
Okay, new private window. Okay. Now search eBay.
Now go to eBay, eBay.com.
Let's see if the search would. Do you get a little purple mask? And it's
I
in
do.
The upper right corner on my window.
Yep. Let me see. This looks different.
Now SD card or whatever it is you're going to put in.
22,000 results.
Okay, now I'm getting... now I'm getting searches. Like, I got all kinds of SD cards. Like,
there you go.
But why did I have to go to a private window?
Because there is some, I don't know what, but there is something somewhere in your system. And Steve is right. It could be in your router. Although,
that shouldn't change private browsing. It has to be in the Firefox installation.
It's got to be somewhere in there. I don't know.
Some setting somewhere.
What version of Linux are you using?
Oh, let's see. Right now I'm in the Windows. I've got three different Linux distros.
Yeah.
I've got...
but this is what's making me crazy. It happens in every operating system.
Every operating system.
And only Firefox.
It happens on Microsoft. It happens on Android.
Yeah, and only Firefox.
On, what's Linux?
I don't know. I simply do not know.
To me, it's something that... In the update of Firefox, they did something in the update that added some kind of a block.
Yeah, it's got to be some of the contact blockers somewhere. But wouldn't private browsing still have the blockers on, just not store the history?
Yes.
So, and then the big question is, why did it happen on a brand new install?
Exactly.
Because it's built into the Firefox feature.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but why is nobody else in the world getting it, just me?
Exactly. I don't know where are you loading Firefox from?
From the from wherever they tell me to get it from. Like in Linux, it's from whichever
distribution.
Whichever distribution. I'm going from the distro's software installer.
Yeah. I do not get
Firefox
it.
Firefox supports DOH. DNS over HTTPS.
That you're having a stroke.
No.
So at least I can. You gave me a workaround. I'm in one of my other operating systems. All I got to do is go to the private window, and I'll be able to do searches.
Right.
But nobody knows why this is happening.
No, I'm sorry. I wish I did. I do not.
Well, I'd like to challenge your mind.
Well, you've certainly done that. You have certainly done that.
Make sure you get Firefox version 100. They had a big 100 thanks for their 100th version.
Right.
Chrome went to 100 a couple weeks ago.
Well, at least you got it working. And I ran virus checks. I ran malware checks.
Yeah, at some settings somewhere in Firefox that's on by default. That's
and yet, I'm running Firefox,
works.
Default.
Yeah. And no problems.
Yeah. So I don't know what happened to me.
Gremlins.
I don't get it. I do not get it, and I'm sorry.
You know, if it happens again, it's a feature.
There you
exactly.
go.
Exactly. All right, thanks for the stumper, Bill.
Okay, thanks, guys.
Thanks. Bye-bye. Yeah, that's our start of the day.
Stumper of the week.
So that's a great way to start the day.
It happens in all browsers.
On every operating system.
On every operating system. On different computers.
Think it's his router.
Yeah. Is he using like OpenDNS for tracking protection or spyware protection and maybe something in there? But if it works in the other browsers, that means there's nothing wrong in the router. If it works in a private window, that means there's nothing wrong in the router.
Yeah, but it's not working on all of his machines. Windows,
Right, but only Android? Firefox doesn't work on any machine or any OS, but other browsers do.
Yeah, it's...
And a private window works.
Right. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Dan from Brighton, New York. Hiya, Dan. What's up?
Hey, how you guys doing today?
Peachy, how are you?
Oh, I'm pretty good, but I have an annoying problem. It's not a major one, but it's a puzzler. I'm looking at an iMac, and when I call up the Mac mail, it preliminarily displays everything good, and then maybe about a half a second later, I get a white flash, sort of like you were looking at your iPhone and taking a selfie with a flash. All of a sudden, the screen goes white for an instant, and then everything comes back good. And it doesn't do it, but maybe, well, every time I turn on the Mac mail, I can't explain why it does it intermittently like that. Now it's fine. I can do my mail thing okay.
But if it does the flash for just a second and then comes back fine?
Yeah.
And this happens regularly or irregularly?
It happens regularly when I open Mac Mail.
And only in Mac Mail?
Let me try opening Safari and see if it does it. I don't think it does it in Safari. I think it's just Mac Mail.
Well, you try a different mail reader and see if it...
I have not.
It happens there. I have seen cases where on an old version of Mail, a heavily formatted HTML message will cause it to crash. We run into that with messages from Spectrum, that they have so much HTML and code and flashing and whatnot, that people with older OSs that are running an older version of Mail, it will crash. And so you usually have to log into Webmail and delete that message.
Dan, how old is this Mac?
Let's see.
And what OS is it running?
It is running Catalina 10.15.7.
That should be fine.
And
it can't be that old then. Monterey is a new one, right?
Yeah.
It's a quad core i5.
Yeah. What I was thinking is it was doing a refresh of the screen.
Yeah. You could turn
off.
And
it was so slow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Turn off the preview pane and just have the mail list and see if it does the same thing there.
Okay. Where do I find that setting?
In the view menu, I think it is, or you can drag the boundary between the mail list and the preview pane.
All right, I turn that off.
And see if that refreshes. Yeah, we had a customer the other day. In the mail list, it shows you from subject and a couple of lines of the message.
Right.
Trying to be helpful to let you decide if you want to read it or not. But if it's spam, it then executes the couple of lines of the message. So we turned off the message list there as well.
Yeah, always turn off the preview. Always turn off the preview. Dan?
Yeah.
Stay on the line. We got to take a break. And it's going to be a fairly longer break. But we'll come back to you. And we'll come back to everybody. We are done with the first hour. But honestly, don't go too far because there's a whole nother hour of the longest running computer show in the known universe coming your way. We're going to have more Dave Enright, more Steve Ray, more Nick Francesco, way too much of Dan and you. It is 59 minutes after the hour. You are listening to the longest running computer show in the known universe. That's Soundbites right here in the truly great and truly grateful to you that we can continue to be member supported. Jazz 90.1. Please vote in the poll and give us a call. 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. And we will see you on the other side.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District and official media partner of this year's CGI Rochester International Jazz Festival, Jazz 90.1.
On Instagram at WGMC Jazz 901.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And? Oh, great.
You lost your clock.
At 5 minutes after the hour, I plugged in the power cord, and you get the little notice that says battery now charging right over the clock. At 5 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And we have Dan on the line. Dan, what happened during the break?
Okay. Well, turning off the preview didn't eliminate the problem, but it makes it less noticeable and annoying. What I did was I killed the mail multiple times, sent myself a new message, turned on the mail, and it seems like it's just blinking after I crank up the program to kind of do a refresh.
It probably is.
It's probably doing a refresh, yeah, but why would it be so slow? What else is running on that machine?
That's it.
How much RAM did it have?
Ooh.
It's back in that same about box about this Mac.
Yeah, 8 gig.
And that's certainly more than enough if that's the only thing you're running.
Yeah.
Would resetting the RAM help it?
It shouldn't have anything to do with that, but it wouldn't hurt. We have seen issues with older computers running slower with Catalina on a spinning drive. And even 8 gigs of RAM on a spinning drive is sometimes slow.
If it's reloading stuff from the drive, and it's a spinning drive, and it had spun down, then yes, I can absolutely see that happening.
And reloading your old list of messages.
Right.
While it's probably talking to the internet to see if there's any new messages.
Right.
And
having to spin up the hard drive to pull that old list off.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can see it.
There's a setting in System Preferences under Energy Saver that lets you, there's an option to spin down the hard drive as soon as possible as a battery saving technique, but on a desktop,
why do you need that?
Doesn't really matter.
Yeah, yeah, really.
But it's on by default.
More on a laptop.
Yeah. And even then, I don't want my hard drive spinning up and down so much and wearing it out.
Right.
Yeah.
We had a computer the other day that was running so slow, we couldn't find any process doing it. It felt like a bad hard drive, so we're running smart diagnostics and finally found what was the name of it? It was a life parameter, and it said average spin up and spin down time. So the hard drive had 20,000 hours on it, which isn't bad. Spin up and spin down, it says the average is about 500,000. This computer had 5 million spin ups and spin downs.
Whoa!
Yeah, that's probably the hard drive wearing out.
You think?
At least one thing to do is to go in and turn off that parameter. Steve will
put hard drive to sleep as soon as possible is the wording they use.
Yeah, and then turn that off entirely. You don't really on a desktop that's plugged in all the time. You don't need much in the way of power saving features at all, frankly.
Yeah, because it's more wear and tear on them.
The only one you really need is the monitor.
Okay.
What language is this, and why did it find this language? LV. Latvian?
Could be. So try that. But other than that, what it sounds like is happening is it's a very slow refresh for whatever reason.
Mm-hmm.
I would first, my diagnostic troubleshooting skills lead me to say, make sure that the hard drive is never spinning down. That's the place to start.
No need for it.
This is a SSD.
Is it? Okay.
Well, check to make sure that the Mac understands that and is not trying to spin it down.
Okay.
It can't hurt to try that at least. Yeah. So.
All righty. The emails that I'm creating are very simple. It's just, you know, a subject line test and a one line in the text itself.
So right.
Complicated or pictures or anything. Okay, well, I think by turning off the preview, at least it's less annoying, and I think we can deal with it.
And it's often safer that way anyway, because then any spam or junk that shows up doesn't get opened when you are trying to delete it. Because a lot of times just by the subject line you can tell it's spam, but with that preview turned on, it actually opens the message when you try to delete it.
Right. So for everyone listening, turn off preview. It's a very bad thing to have, which is, of course, why it's the default on every email program in the galaxy.
Because it's convenient to be able to see your list of messages and then automatically view the message when you click on one.
Yeah. That used to be okay before 90% of messages were trying to get into your computer, but it's not such a good thing now. Okay, thanks, Dan. Good luck.
I'll talk to you tomorrow.
Yep. Bye-bye.
Bye.
That's Dan reminding me to tell everybody that on Sunday nights at 9 p.m., we hold the Sound Bites Lounge, courtesy of Mastermind Lounge. And it's pretty easy to do. Just go to soundbites.org/lounge, and you will see a link. The link is only active at 9 p.m., because we had people emailing me saying, I got into the lounge and nobody was there. Well, that's because it's Tuesday and we don't do the lounge on Tuesday. We do the lounge at Sunday nights at 9 p.m. Eastern time. So now it only shows up at 9 p.m. Eastern time. And so from 9 to 10, we will be in the lounge. If you have a computer question, you can come there and ask it. In the meantime, we're taking calls here at 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. And right now we're going to talk to Larry from Rochester, New York. Hi, Larry. What's up?
Good afternoon, guys. I have the problem, and it seems to be an ongoing problem, that every time Chrome updates, I lose all of the saved passwords. And I've been online trying to Google up a solution, and it looks like Google either dances around a solution or people start into what appears to be a solution and then wander off in another direction. This has become quite frustrating to the point I'm actually thinking about giving up on Google.
Sure. Okay, so let me ask a couple of quick questions, because this is not common. It certainly doesn't happen to anybody I've talked to. So let me ask a couple of questions. Did you change where you save your passwords? And if you did, you have to reset that place every time you update Chrome. But that's on you, not on Chrome.
Okay, you kind of lost me with that. Where I save my passwords.
So if you don't remember changing it, you probably didn't.
So when you update Chrome, are you signed in as the same user?
Yes. You know, the other day I got a message that said you need to update. It was up in the upper right-hand corner.
Right.
And so finally I went ahead and updated, and I thought everything was okay until I went to a site while I was listening to the program today to try to get in, and all of a sudden I can't get in. So I, you know, fiddle around, went to a couple of places, and realized that my list of saved passwords and Google Chrome is no more. So I'm back to trying to go through my list of passwords, et cetera, and put them back in, which I'm tired of doing that now.
Sure.
Are you logged into your Google account?
Yes.
Are you on Windows?
No, I have a Mac OS.
Right. Okay, so what you can do, just to make sure, is you should probably back up your password file. And then you can always replace it if this happens again.
Where does it put it on the Mac? Let me find that.
Right. You can certainly see where your passwords are. That's pretty easy, and I think, well, Steve's in it right now, but I think he can, I think you can then export your passwords to a file.
And then you could, right,
and then input, import them again. And what that would let you do is, and that's not a bad habit for everyone to get into, as long as you store it someplace secure, like off your computer on a thumb drive. But if you were to back up your password file and then restore it every time you do an update, that would solve the problem. Yeah, it's not as convenient as it works correctly every time, but it's a workaround while we find the right solution.
All right. Well, that might be the thing to do, is just to go into the Mac and back up my passwords there.
Yeah, before you do an update, back up, and then if it loses it, you can restore.
Yeah. I've found a couple of places where the other people online seem to have suffered this problem. But like I said, I didn't really find a definitive answer, something you could just jump into and say, that's why it's not doing that. So after a while, I just decided to either call you guys or switch to something else or just go to Safari full time and be done with it.
Right. No, I get that. The stuff is all stored.
Yeah,
just go with a product like NPass.
There's an export password.
NPass would be a lot easier. Don't have to worry about backing it up. It's up on the cloud, and you can use it on multiple devices. If he's going to have to re-enter
That's true. Use it instead an external product like NPass.
Yeah, instead of reinventing the wheel time after time just because of an update, if you store it up on set it all up in NPass, there's only one password you got to remember. And then from there on, you can keep adding and going.
That's the same way the Apple Keychain works, too.
Yeah.
Okay, so I can use... I've been thinking about going back into Keychain, and I just got an update news from 1Pass. So, but I guess 1Pass is about as good as NPass. I'm not quite sure which one is better, but one of those...
6-1.
Yeah, they're the same. Same.
Okay.
But for people who want to know where it is, it's in your library... Application support, Google, Chrome, default databases, and you'll find several SQL-like databases.
Yeah.
And if you go into the settings inside of Chrome, I just posted a link, there's an export passwords button.
Yeah, but is there an import passwords button?
That's in a different place.
Okay, but there is one.
Yeah.
Okay, that's important.
Okay.
So, yeah, you can do an export-import, or you could... back up the file itself and replace it there. What it sounds like is happening is that when you update Chrome, it's deleting that database, and that's...
Shouldn't happen either.
Shouldn't happen. Why are we having this day?
Well, it
Gremlins.
Does. At least it does for me. As a matter of fact, when I saw this update... I watched it for a week or two because I said, I know it's going to delete my passwords, and I wasn't sure how to stop it. And then finally I bit the bullet because they said there were security settings in there too. So I said, well, let me do it. Sure enough, I go in there and all of my passwords are gone.
Yeah, okay. So theoretically, if you back up those that database, the password database, and then you update and it replaces that database, you should be able to put your database back, then start Chrome. You got to do all that before you restart Chrome. But when you start it, it should read that database because it is their database.
Sounds like it's just easier to go to 1Pass or NPass and be done with
it. And be done with it.
Yeah.
Or the Keychain.
Or the Keychain if you only have Apple devices.
Yeah. No, I got Keychain and okay. All right, well, I got to make a decision, but I want to go down the path of least resistance, and you just outlined more work than I think I want to do.
There you go.
That's fair. I get it.
All right. Thank you, guys.
Yep.
All right, thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Yeah, it's an interesting problem. I've not seen that one before either. But the solution is to simply not use Chrome for your passwords. And NPass, 1Pass... LastPass, anyone that will automatically put in your keychain, anyone that will automatically put in your passwords for you, is a good replacement for that.
What's interesting is that each of the browser manufacturers won't sync their bookmarks with the other browsers. It only
what
syncs,
a pain in the neck
only
that
syncs
is.
With itself. There used to be third-party add-ons that would let you sync your passwords between browsers, and it all broke when each browser tightened up its add-on policies so that you couldn't share files.
Right, right, right. One of the things that I do every day at 3 a.m. is back up all my databases, including the for all my browsers and for everything, including all the password files and all of that. So I've got them in two different places locally, plus, of course, a couple places online. But that makes it less likely that I'll lose anything. But that still doesn't solve a problem like Larry's having, which is that it just automatically disappears every time.
It sounds like it's the thing that happens with a Windows update where it moves everything off, puts the new software in, and then forgets to move your stuff back in.
Yeah, it doesn't copy it back.
Yeah.
Right. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Ed from Henrietta.
I don't know if we want to go back to the phones.
Yeah, no, maybe we don't. Maybe we don't. Ed from Henrietta, New York. Hi, Ed. What's up?
Hi, I just wanted to get your advice to see if I made the right decision. Last week I got a Chromebook. It's a Lenovo. And I got one that Nick had outlined for some of the parameters you get. This one has the 8 gigabytes of RAM and storage 128, and it's got a display 13.3, et cetera. And I haven't had a chance to open it yet because I've got 7 more days to open it.
Right, right, right.
And my question is, if I can do, maybe a stupid question, if I can do everything on my Android phone that suits me, it takes a little bit longer sometimes to type, but why would I buy a Chromebook? Is that faster, bigger, or is it more sophisticated?
The big difference is the size of the screen. It depends on how good your eyes are. So having a larger screen and a real keyboard, if much of what you do is typing, so for example, I do a lot of writing. A lot of writing. I want a real keyboard. Can I do it on my phone? Absolutely. Do I want to? Absolutely not.
Yeah.
But if you're content with your phone, if your phone does everything you need it to do and you can see it fine and you can type what you want to type and all of that, you don't need more. Don't need more.
I just like the fact that it's got a detachable screen which you can use like as a tablet. Maybe that was a selling point the guy was telling me about.
Right.
Yeah, those are convertible laptops, and you can get them in Windows and Chrome.
Right.
Not Mac. Well, you can take the screen off, but you can't put it back on.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you can. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, I didn't know if Lenovo, if you thought that was a pretty decent, it seems like a nice.
Lenovo makes a really good product, and if you're going to use it, it's real easy to use. When you detach it, it becomes a tablet. So now it's a big phone.
Right.
Right. Exactly. So, you know, what some people, again, what some people prefer is the larger screen, particularly if they're going to watch a movie or whatever on it. The more real estate, the better.
I was watching some of the soccer playoffs from England on the phone, and you almost have to have a magnifying glass. Also.
Exactly.
This is nuts, you know. When did you get and this was on sale for $150 less. So I figured, well, you know, they have a nice display down there. It's a nice looking one. They had a one beside it was a Dell, and the Dell looked, I don't want to say cheesy, but it was a 10-inch. But it was when you closed it, and it didn't have the tactile sense that you had. It like it had said something slippery in your hand. I asked the kid specifically your question. I said, I need to get a carrying case for this. Well, he says, we don't sell them specifically for that. We can kind of give you a generic carrying case. Because I said, I'd like them to the next set to get one because I don't want to drop it. Well, no, I didn't know. My question would be, do they have a carrying case for this, or is it just a generic thing that they have for Chromebooks?
Right, right, right. Listen, generic. If you've got a week, right? So yeah. My suggestion is open the thing up, play around with it. You've got 7 days to do that. If you find you don't care for it, on day five, power wash it. What okay. power wash does is completely obliterate everything you've done to it, including your passwords, et cetera, and turns so it into a brand reset? New. Sorry?
Is that like a factory reset?
It is a factory reset. It is now a brand new Lenovo Chromebook. You,
gotcha.
You power wash it and then turn it off. After it power washes, it'll come up and say, you know, log in, it's brand new. Don't. Turn it off, put it back in the box, and return it. But okay. you can't make that determination until you actually sit down and play with it.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, the one they had at the store was really nifty. Had a lot of stuff on there. It seemed like it was faster. And you're right, there's a big difference for your eyes. When
yeah,
you're
yeah. and there. As far as the carrying cases, those are generic. Usually, because there's so many sizes yeah. and varieties.
You find a 10-inch or 12-inch or 15-inch.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've got my carrying case. I've got two of them. One is about 15 years old, and the other one's only about 10 years old. And they work great.
Yeah, and they come with different features, you know, yeah. pockets and everything else. So it's just mm-hmm. what you want. Because not all two people are the Although same as far as what they want to carry.
Yeah. On my old computer, I did have a plastic shell
yeah.
that was specifically made for the Model Mac I had. And that stays on the computer, which is kind of a nice protection from scuffs right. and scrapes and bumps. Oh, sorry for everyone on the video. I just closed my camera for a second. The nice thing about a carry bag is it helps you carry it, but when you take it out of that bag, it's not protected anymore.
The only downside, and I don't think it is, because I heard Dave talk about it once, I'm too cheap to pay, Frontier $40 a month for a dedicated line, so I take right. the, I've got unlimited on my phone for data, so I just take this with it, and hopefully this will pick it up, I guess. If you lay it near the phone, it'll just...
Well, it depends on how you set your phone up, but you can tether it. You can use your phone as a Wi-Fi hotspot.
Right, a hotspot, yeah. And that's secure, right, I hope?
Yes.
Yeah.
As long as you don't give anyone else the password, yeah.
It'll have a password in there. You hit hotspot, and it'll give you an A, something like a password.
You can put in a password, and of course, as with every password, the longer, more complex, the better.
Yeah.
I've done that. I've said this before. We took a train trip, and I used the unlimited data on my phone, mm-hmm. so my wife could do her Facebook farm. And several people stopped by and said, "There's Wi-Fi in this train?" "No, my husband's letting me use his data." "Oh, how nice! You know, it's unlimited data."
Well, when it goes over to tether, does it affect the quality of the picture? Or
It
Chromebook?
Everything depends on the speed of your phone's data. So if it's fast enough, I've got whatever 5G or whatever the heck it is this week, and so that's pretty fast. But you've got to be aware that it's going to. It depends on the speed of your phone's data.
Yeah. Now, one thing to keep in mind is some carriers charge extra for hotspot and some don't. So you have to make sure your carrier.
I didn't know that. I think of that.
Theoretically, in Western New York, Verizon cannot legally charge for a hotspot because they were given some of the radio spectrum from cell phones. And mm-hmm. therefore, they have to offer that for free. At least it used to be that way. I don't know that it still is.
It's a good thing to check. Good.
Yeah. Check with your carrier.
I'm glad I called you. All right. I will give this a shot. Thanks for your help. I appreciate it.
Good luck. Thanks.
Take care.
Bye-bye. All right. We are going to take a quick break, but we will be back in just a couple of minutes. With Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and with you. It is 29 minutes after the hour, and you're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That would be Soundbites, right here on the truly great and truly grateful to you that we are member-supported Jazz 90.1. What a perfect time to vote in the poll. Be right back.
It's America's longest running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Henry.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 34 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites. And Pwn to Own is up, ladies and gentlemen. Pwn to Own is I think twice yearly, three times yearly. Anyway, it's a contest where people try to break into various things, and there are prizes. And the deal is you break into this thing, you then tell them how you did it so they can fix it before it goes out to the public, right? So
you get paid for breaking it.
Well, wait till you see what they got this year.
15th anniversary. I didn't know it had been going on that long.
Yeah. During the first day of Pwn to Own Vancouver 2022, contestants won $800,000 after successfully exploiting 16 zero-day bugs to hack multiple products, including Microsoft's Windows 11 operating system and the Teams communication platform. The first to fall was Microsoft Teams in the enterprise communication category after Hector Peralta exploited an improper configuration flaw. The Star Labs team also demonstrated a Teams zero-day exploit chain of two bugs, an injection and arbitrary file write. Microsoft Teams was hacked a third time by Masato Kinugawa, who exploited a three-bug chain of injection, misconfiguration, and sandbox escape. Each of them earned $150,000 for successfully demonstrating their Microsoft Teams zero days. $150,000 for finding a bug. Not half bad. Star Labs also earned an extra $40,000 after escalating privileges on a system running Windows 11 using a use-after-free weakness, and an additional $40,000 by achieving privilege escalation on Oracle VirtualBox. Manfred Paul also successfully demoed two bugs, prototype pollution and proper input validation, to hack Microsoft Firefox and an out-of-band write on Apple Safari to earn $150,000. Other highlights from the first day include a bunch of people demonstrating more zero days on Windows 11 and Ubuntu desktop. After the security vulnerabilities are demonstrated and disclosed during Pwn to Own, software and hardware vendors have 90 days to develop and release security fixes for all reported flaws. I expect we'll be seeing the Ubuntu desktop fixes within a week.
And Microsoft you might see in 6 months.
Exactly. During the Pwn to Own Vancouver 2022 contest, security researchers will target products in the web browser virtualization, local escalation of privilege, servers, enterprise communications, and automotive categories. They will be able to earn more than $1 million in cash and prizes, including a Tesla Model 3 and a Tesla Model S. The top award for hacking a Tesla is now $600,000 and maybe the car itself.
Whoa.
So are you still feeling secure about your operating system? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-0415.
There's some interesting arguments about these contests. So most companies have a bug bounty where if you report a bug to them, they pay you. But some of these groups will save the bugs up to get to the contest, which has more money. And that could mean that the bad guys are exploiting these bugs.
Right.
Until the contest.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it's a roll of the dice, but at least they're, you know, even if they are saving it up, you know, until the contest, at least they're still turning it over, and that information is being utilized to correct the issues. Like you and I were talking about before, before the show, folks, we were talking about scammers. There's these two guys right now out there about scammers. They wrote a program that can turn around and talk about, you know, breaking code and everything else. Well, these scammers, they usually are on a laptop when they're calling people.
Right.
Well, these guys came up with a great program that can hack into now that person's laptop and turn on the camera. So these two guys will sit there and talk to the scammers. You were saying that the one that you saw, yeah. He's going, oh, the guy looks like he's sleepy. And the guy realized that he's on camera, and they've been doing it quite a few times, and they're, how'd you do that? Give me my... another one that they came up with that I saw is they actually locked up the computer, that they couldn't do anything else. They couldn't turn off the camera and everything else. And they were sort of panning around, seeing it. They were trying, they were going bonkers because they locked it. Give me my computer back.
Yeah.
Nope.
Well, another one I saw was the guy found out where they were and mailed them, physically mailed them a glitter bomb.
Oh,
so when they opened it, yep. Poof, glitter.
Oh. And
try wiping up glitter.
Oh, that's.
I dare you.
You, I've seen them where the guy, this one guy, does glitter and, let's say, odors.
Yeah. Yes, yes.
This and
seemed
sirens.
To have been just a glitter bomb. Yeah. But yeah, so there are people fighting back against scammers. There are not enough of them, I think. I don't know how legal any of that is. I'm not a lawyer. I don't even play one on television anymore.
There have been stories about that. The BBC did a big report on botnets. They bought a botnet, did all their research, did the report, and then they put a message on everybody's screen that was controlling in the botnet and said, your computer's infected, you should go, you know, get it fixed. They got sued and fined because they broke into someone else's computer.
Yep.
It didn't matter that they were telling you that there's a problem. Now, see, nowadays we don't believe any of those fake messages that pop up because they're probably fake.
Yep. Right.
But if it was a real message. In fact, I also read about some of the bad guys. When they break into a computer, they patch the hole behind them.
Yes.
So that no one else
close
can
the door
break
behind
in.
Them.
Yeah. No one else can break in and steal them. In fact, you look at the Have I Been Pwned list, a lot of the biggest leaked passwords are bad guys breaking into other bad guys.
Nice.
Well, the lady from the Better Business Bureau, she does a whole series, too, about scamming the scammers.
Mm-hmm.
And she'll lead them on and everything else.
The first thing to remember, never say the word yes.
Correct.
Never say yes or uh-huh or okay. None of that stuff. Someone calls you, somebody, you pick up the phone and someone says, is this Nick? This is he.
Well, I usually
say, are you sure? Is this Nick Francesco? This is he. I'm just verifying. Are you Nick Francesco? This is he.
See, I usually just say, how can I help you?
Right.
You know, they'll sit there.
See, that's also how you avoid getting a subpoena.
The way Dave does it, yeah.
Never admit who you are.
Who's asking?
You've been served.
Right.
Can I help you?
Well, there's, I don't know if you remember.
At least so far, you cannot be served over the phone, I believe.
No.
Remember the adventures of Wendy Wilcox and her dog Willis?
I do not.
No.
In 2002, Wired Magazine had an article, and it still exists on the internet, about this first person that scammed the Nigerian scammers. And basically started this whole conversation with him, sent pictures of pretty ugly people claiming that, you know, this is me, got him to go to an internet cafe with a camera and got a picture of them, claiming that, you know, when I scam people, I usually take 20% and you only want 10%. That's a pretty good deal.
Hey, nice.
On and on and on and on.
Nice.
That's the thing, though, folks. I say, you don't answer with, you know, like Nick was saying, with your name or anything else or acknowledging it. Always be on the defense because, you know, if the scammers are calling you, they should know your information.
Right. So if a bank calls you, they would know who they called and they would know your account number. They wouldn't need to ask you. Right.
Or the same with, you know, if they sit there and say it's a Social Security scam or anything else. Well, if they're calling you, they know your name and number. They shouldn't have to ask you for your name and that.
You called me. Here's the other thing. You should have a bookmark for your bank.
Yep.
And so when you get a call that says there's a problem with your account, the first thing you do is go to your bank, whether it's on your phone or your tablet or your desktop. I don't care where it is. You immediately go to your bank. If there is a real problem, there will be a notice.
I would say the safest way would be to call. Because if folks are in the habit, because sites can be so deceiving,
right?
Just pick up the phone. That's what you got a phone for. Pick it up and call them. You can talk to a live person.
You're asking me to use my cell phone to make a call?
That's what they're... I hate to break this to you. I know you're sitting down. This is what they are originally made for.
Oh, no. Citation yeah. needed at yeah. that point. No. yeah.
Mm-hmm. If you use a known good bookmark, then you right. don't get tricked by the fake link in the email. Right. That you
and
on.
They make them look so real. Authentic, folks. I know.
I got a good one the other day. Apple was inviting me to change my password on my iCloud account.
Nice.
So they were being really polite about it.
So nice of them.
Very polite. No, I have bookmarks for all of the monetary things I do, and I know that they go to the good sites, the real sites.
Mm-hmm.
So when I get a call or an email or a text message, I never click on the link. I just go to my browser, log into my bank, and take a look. And it has never been the case that there was a real problem, except once, and that's when my credit card was stolen, and I got a notification that said your credit card has been canceled. Call the bank. Well, I was on the bank's website. I already have the bank's phone number from the bank themselves. So I called the number. We got through it. Everything was fine. But that's happened a few times since with the new card. They'll say, I get a call. This is such and so at the bank. They don't ask me for information. They just say, did you buy, six?
Yeah, see, I do the same with me. They always call. I never get emails or that type of stuff. They always call. They want to talk to you. They'll leave a message.
They don't ask me a bunch of questions.
Mm-mm.
They say, this is such and so at the bank. Did you buy blah, blah, blah today? No, I did not. Okay, we'll cancel your card.
Yep.
Done.
Yep.
Then you go into the bank, prove you're you, and get a new card.
Yep.
That's the way it works. And if they're asking you for all kinds of information, they are not real.
Mm-hmm. And do not, under any circumstances, I don't care what they tell you, you do not go to any store and get gift cards. No place accepts gift cards scammers.
Except the name on the card.
Right, right.
They're doing that to scam you. You do not pay the IRS or Social Security or any other place in gift cards. They don't want Apple Music cards.
Right. Speaking of gift cards, my daughter has about, I think, 30 or 40,000 applications where you take a picture of a receipt and you get money. Now Amazon is doing that, too. You do a receipt and money goes on to the Amazon gift card. I don't have an Amazon gift card. I suppose I could get one. But you any receipt and you get Amazon gift card money, and then you can redeem it only, obviously, at Amazon for products. And, of course, the reason they do that is they want to know more about your buying habits.
So they can sell you ads.
So they can send you ads for those things.
Because they wouldn't need the receipt if you bought it from them.
That's exactly right. But they want all your other receipts so that they can decide.
So for anything, food, grocery, anything.
It's called the Amazon Shopper Panel.
Right. And so you can do that. And if you don't mind giving them all your information for a penny here, a penny there.
Yeah,
my daughter does that. And, of course, she scans all of my wife's receipts from the market. So she's always getting ads for milk and things like that, specialized hot chocolates and that stuff. She's like, I don't care. I'm getting, they're not, I don't care because they're not really mine.
Well, see, that's where something is. You could also set it up if they're going to email you or anything, you put it up to a junk email account. So it just, all that junk goes there and it's like, whatever.
This is also, you get the, we found something you might like. I got another one this morning for something I just bought yesterday. What the?
Yes, I liked that. That's why I bought it. You should know that. Yes. I bought it from you. You should know that.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. I get it when you search for something. And my wife is always calling me up. Can you search for this and tell me what it will cost on Amazon? So I get the weird. They can't imagine.
It's easier to call you than for her to just do it.
Yes. Yes, it is.
If he wants to sleep with both eyes closed.
That's right. And I'm happy to do it, honey. So I just get the point of that story was not my wife's calling habits. The point of that story was the weird stuff Amazon thinks I'm buying.
You're interested. Well, what's this guy?
Because sometimes it's not even for her. It's for somebody else, or she's just curious or whatever.
She told her friend she'd look into it.
Right. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I get. I can't imagine what Amazon actually thinks of me. Because also do that for other people who will say, you know, what if I? What about this? Where can I get this? Well, you could try eBay, which is, you know, going to cost you this much, but you don't know the seller and what you're going to get, or you buy it on Amazon, it costs you this much.
Check the return policy.
And they have a return policy and everything else. So I do a lot of that. And so Amazon thinks I buy everything. I buy things I cannot possibly use as a male, but I'm buying them, and that's okay.
Well, you could, but they're not going to question it.
Right, it's a gift.
That your personal life.
The gift that keeps on giving.
Yeah. All right, before we go, I'll read one more news item. Apple has updated its App Store rules to make it so subscriptions can auto-renew without your explicit permission, even if the developer has raised the monthly or annual price. Before the rule change, users would have to manually opt into a subscription renewal if it came with a price bump. Now that won't necessarily be the case, though you'll still be notified about the price change before it happens. Apple says it's making the change to help avoid the situation where users unintentionally lose access to a subscription because they missed an opt-in message. According to Apple's Monday Evening Post, there are specific conditions that developers will have to follow if they want to offer what a company is calling an auto-renewable subscription price increase. For starters, it can only be so big. Rules say that if a developer increases a weekly or monthly subscription by more than 50%, and that difference is over $5, it doesn't qualify. For an annual subscription, devs can still raise the price by 50%, but can't raise it more than $50 without requiring an opt-in. Here are some examples of what that would look like. Let's say I have a subscription that's $60 a year. The developer could raise it to 90, which is 60 plus 50%, and it would auto-renew without me having to opt in. If I have a monthly subscription that's $15, and the developers want to raise it to $22, in theory, I'd have to opt into that. It's less than a 50% increase, but it's over the $5 cap. So there are rule sets. The price can only be raised once per year without requiring an opt-in, which should prevent scammy apps from slowly increasing their price by a buck or two every other month. Apple also says the price increase has to be permissible by local law, although that one was probably a given. If any of these conditions aren't met, you'll still have to opt into the price increase, otherwise your subscription will lapse. Apple says that users will be warned about upcoming automatic renewals with price changes by email, push notification, and in-app messaging. It's worth noting that you could easily turn Apple's logic on its head. If users were missing those renewal opt-in notices, wouldn't they also miss the new price change warnings? But it does sound like they'll be relatively in your face. If Apple wants to be really consumer-friendly, of course, it could make it so subscriptions don't auto-renew by default. So what do you think? Auto-renew or not auto-renew?
Yeah, I always check that box. Check if that box is checked.
Right.
And turn off auto-renewal because I don't know if I'll want to renew it again.
I set up reminders in my calendar about a week before. And then that way it's like, do I still want this?
There have been some really scammy applications that have been caught recently. One of them had a $50 per week charge.
Wow.
Whoa.
And apparently people didn't read that was per week and signed up for it.
Wow.
Holy.
And so technically they did nothing wrong.
I'm charging way too little for SNCC, which does auto-renew.
So it's as a developer, you can put whatever price you want on it.
Right.
And if the customer says buy, what happened to let the buyer beware? If it says $50 per week and you say yes, don't be surprised when it's $50 per week.
Because you didn't read.
Yeah. And for the auto-renew, it's one of the things we see a lot. In fact, there's new companies that will help you turn off your subscriptions.
Right.
just go to your settings and turn them off yourself. Here, I saved you money. Send me the fee that they would have charged
right,
you.
Right, right,
but,
right.
But yeah, people forget they have subscriptions, and then it's like every month, oh, there was another $38 charge on my account. What was that for? Oh, those three subscriptions I don't use. I better change that. And then you forget till the next month, and you see another charge.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Go in and look at your subscription list and turn off the things you don't.
You have a subscription list, right?
Yeah.
I mean, when you sign up for something, you write that down, right?
Yeah. Well, if that's one of the advantages of using the Apple App Store or the Google Play Store, is all your subscriptions are listed there.
Right.
But if you go outside subscription services, then you have to remember when it comes due again, and that's when you get the email that your payment is due, your subscription renewed, something like that. Turn it off if you don't want it anymore.
I will say I'm very pleased that a number of people emailed me that they did not get the Ask Nick column 1 week. That's because it was Mother's Day, so yeah. I didn't send one out. But I also didn't send out a notice saying no newsletter this week. And I should have. And thank you for those who were kind enough to ask about it. It means people are paying attention. Mm-hmm. So that was nice.
Anxiously awaiting this.
Anxiously awaiting. Yeah. It goes out every Sunday, so.
But like I say, you can
see
set
people
it up.
Get home from church, and the first thing they do,
yep,
go look for, which doesn't usually go out until 4 p.m, but still.
Yeah, but you can set it up so easily if you're using, say, Google Calendars. I just set it up, and you can have it auto remind you every year. It's right. An annual thing, yearly thing, and I've got throughout there my different magazines that I get or other things that I've signed up different services. That way I've got a little more control because, like you say, it, and Steve was saying, you know, it's too easy to forget, oh, yeah, that's coming up and I got to check it. Well, if you leave it on auto-renew, it's after the fact and it's right. Like, oh, sorry, you know, getting your money back, good luck.
It's usually when your credit card expires, those subscriptions you forgot about stop.
Right. And the fact is that, you know, every once in a while I get somebody who says I didn't want to pay for this again. Okay, there's an unsubscribe button, but I will happily refund you your money and take you off the list.
Mm-hmm.
But there is an unsubscribe button, and all you have to do is unsubscribe.
Did you tell me you wanted to unsubscribe? Well, I yelled really loud when I got the bill.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's okay. I get it. People don't read anymore, yeah. Frankly, and that's a large part of it. They have they forget to read the bottom, and it's at the bottom of every newsletter.
Yep.
It has to be legally an unsubscribe link, but people don't mm-hmm.
well,
think about it until they get a
after
thing
the
that says you renewed this.
Yeah,
I get it. One of
the problems with those unsubscribe links is if it's a fake email, never click the unsubscribe link.
Right.
Because then the bad guy knows you read the message and will add you to more lists. If it's a legitimate unsubscribe from a legitimate company, then they'll unsubscribe you.
Right.
And then they'll add you back again later for some other reason, but they unsubscribed you now because that's the law.
I got a subscription the other day, an email that I had subscribed to quite a legitimate company. Mm-hmm. It came from the legitimate company. I traced it to the legitimate company, and I was just about to say I didn't order anything from you when I got another email saying, we're sorry about this email. We know you didn't order anything, and we've refunded your money. Well, of course, I never saw either one hit my thing, but it doesn't matter. Whatever.
Your wife signed up in your name.
I asked her. I asked my wife and my daughter, because that happens.
Yep.
I pay for things. That happens. But no, it wasn't that. It was just some glitch in their system, and that happens too. I get it.
Yep.
I do. That's the way that works. All right. That music tells us we are done for another week. I want to thank everybody who called in. I want to thank Dave Enright, Steve Ray. I'm Nick Francesco. You are listening, by the way, or about to finish listening for this week, to the longest running computer show in the known universe. That would be Soundbites, right here on the truly great and truly grateful to you that even though we did not hit our numbers this time, we continue to be with your generous support, member-supported Jazz 90.1. And if you would like to see us continue on the air, you can certainly still donate by going to jazz901.org. Hit that Donate Now button and make your donation to keep us all on the air. And we will see you in just 166 hours. Be good to one another, will you?